It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we learn how to tell if you should take advice or ditch it. First, a new survey from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, or WMC, shows that Wisconsin businesses are less worried about a possible recession than they were 6 months ago, but they're still holding off on hiring new employees. In a few minutes, we'll talk to an economic growth and development expert about what those survey results could tell us about Wisconsin's job market. First, we'll hear from the WMC about what they learned from the 170 businesses they surveyed. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about a recession? If you're a business owner, how does that affect how you hire and what you pay your employees? If you are on the job market, tell us how things are going. If you are in a job, are you happy to stay there for a while based on what's going on now? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nick Novak is Vice President of Communications and Marketing for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. I talked to him yesterday. This is a survey of employers you do from time to time at WMC. What stood out to you the most in this edition?
You know, I think the part that on the economic side that stood out to me was the fact that we've asked a number of times, what does your business expect to do as far as employees? Are they going to increase employees, decrease employees? In this survey, 49% of businesses in Wisconsin said they expect to increase their number of employees in the next 6 months. Now, saying that half of businesses are looking to expand, that sounds good when you look at that number just right off the bat, but it's a drop from 68% a year ago and 79% in our summer 2021 survey. And so that number has steadily been coming down, which is obviously a big concern when you're starting to see that hiring is slowing here in Wisconsin. That's a key factor when you're looking at how the health of the economy is and where we might be going in the next 6 months or a year.
Another question you ask a business owners is if they are concerned that a recession could be on the horizon. Some movement on that question as well.
Correct. About half of businesses believe that we are going to see a recession this year. Now, that has dropped from previous surveys. So even though it's, over half of employers who are kind of preparing and expecting a recession, it is lower than what we've seen over the last year or two. And so everything that we've seen in this survey, the Wisconsin Employer Survey that WMC does every 6 months, is kind of good news, bad news. There's some folks who feel good about the Wisconsin economy, but they have some negative views of the U.S. economy. We're seeing hiring slowing. We're seeing wage growth slow, but we're also seeing fewer people expecting a recession. So just a lot of good news, bad news in the data that we're looking at.
A big thing people have been wondering about for a while, Nick, is this labor shortage concerns, like, hey, we're not finding the people we need to keep our shifts open. What did you find out when you asked employers, hey, are you having trouble hiring people these days?
About 75%, so three quarters of Wisconsin businesses believe that they're having trouble finding workers. That's a huge number, but it's actually smaller than what we've seen over the last few surveys. We've been in the mid to high 80% in that question on previous surveys when we've asked it. And so that is a small drop, but there's still certainly a workforce shortage in Wisconsin, and that's going to continue to be a challenge for our state because we simply don't have enough people here to fill all the jobs that we have today and the careers that we're going to create tomorrow as well. And if you look at our population, it's not growing at the rate that we need it to. From 2010 to 2020, we were about half of the national average when it comes to population change at only 3.6%. And then over the last 3 years, our population in Wisconsin has actually shrunk. And so if you don't have a growing population, you can't really have a growing economy.
Do you have, you've done a whole separate report there at WMC on that demographic issue. Are there solutions? It doesn't sound like there would be easy solutions.
Unfortunately, there's no silver bullet to suddenly just make more people appear in Wisconsin. But we think that you need to focus on three things. You need to retain every born and raised Wisconsinite that we can. And so, we need to get young people engaged in the careers and opportunities that are available here in Wisconsin. We also need to attract people into Wisconsin. Over the last 3 years, if you look at our domestic migration numbers, it's gone back and forth a little bit, but we've lost about 11,000 people to other states. You know, that means more people are leaving Wisconsin than coming in, and we need to reverse that trend. So we need to talk about why Wisconsin is a great place to live, to work, to raise a family, and encourage more people to come into Wisconsin and see all of the amazing economic opportunities that we have. And then we need to get more people off the sidelines. Right now, the Wisconsin labor force participation rate is lower than our historic low that we set in the mid-70s. So in 1976, actually, our labor force participation rate was 65.4%. Today, May 2023, which is the latest numbers, it's 65.1. So we're actually lower than that historic low that we saw in the 70s. So we need to find a way to get more people back into the workforce so that we're having more people ready and willing to contribute to the economy. And if we do all of those three things, you know, there's policies that we can implement to get those done. That's something that long term can hopefully reverse this trend of a slowing population growth and slower economic growth.
One other issue I wanted to get into in the survey, wage growth. With that difficulty in bringing people on board, we saw some businesses paying people more to sign up to work there. What are we seeing with that trend when you survey employers?
Wage growth is definitely slowing down from what we saw right out of the pandemic. As you just mentioned, there were a lot of companies who were desperate to find workers or desperate to retain workers that they already had. And so we saw wages growing at a faster rate than we had really ever seen. That has started to come back a little bit. Businesses are not maybe needing to hire as much because they're kind of seeing some of the tea leaves that the economy is starting to slow down and they're having some concerns about where we might be going. And so they're maybe putting some of those hiring plans on the shelf. If you're not having to hire as many people, you're not having to compete as much, you're not having to drive those wages up at as fast of a rate as what you once were. And so we are seeing the wage growth slow down a little bit. And, you know, as we get more people into the workforce, obviously there will be, you know, a greater supply, which maybe will bring those wage growth numbers down a little bit as well. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But if you look at the economy as a whole, I would say back to what I started with, it's good news, bad news. We're seeing hiring slow down. We're seeing wage growth slow down. But Wisconsin businesses still have a pretty moderate view of the economy overall. So I wouldn't say that we're in dire straits just yet, but I don't know if I'd put my name on this economy right now.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Nick Novak, Vice President of Communications and Marketing for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. We talked to him about the results of a recent survey of Wisconsin businesses conducted by his organization. Coming up, an economic growth and development expert will help us break down what the survey results and the latest job news tells us about Wisconsin's economy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do things look like in your part of the economy, in your line of work? Having trouble hiring people, or are things settling down now? Have your wages gone up? Have you changed jobs? If you run a business, are you worried about a possible solution? What are you doing when it comes to hiring? Are you able to hire people? Join 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about a recent survey of Wisconsin businesses, what it can tell us about the job market in Wisconsin. And you can tell us about the job market in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. Have you changed jobs lately? Have you stuck with what you've got? What's it like out there if you're looking for work, if you're looking to hire people? Love to hear what you're seeing out there right now. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve Deller joins us now, professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to visit with you again, Rob.
We got that summary of this report. Now, this is a business owner perception, basically. What stood out to you there, Steve?
I think that his kind of bottom line is the glass is kind of half full. Is, I think, kind of on target, because I think there's a lot of, there's less uncertainty than there was about 6 months ago. I think that a lot of businesses right now, they feel a little bit more comfortable with what's going on. I think there's general consensus amongst economists that we're probably, from a national perspective, going to go into a kind of a soft landing. And I think businesses are starting to respect that. I think a lot of businesses, and this is evident in their surveys, that they're kind of going a wait and see mode right now. If they see an opportunity to expand, they're going to take that, but they're going to go into a wait and see mode.
Now you're in the studio with me, yes. Which is fun. You were nodding at some points. You shook your head at a couple points. What stood out to you as things that you'd want to question maybe in what you heard in those survey results?
I think that. I use the term glass half full because I have a little bit stronger, better outlook on what's going to happen to the economy. I think that the guest that you were just talking with would maybe said the glass is half empty. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of a different perspective. But I will tell you that if you ever get economists agreeing on something, then you know there's something there. I mean, we look for reasons to disagree.
Now, let's talk about the job market being tight, or are we starting to loosen up a little? What are you seeing out there?
I think that the number of job openings is still very high from a historical perspective, particularly if you go back before the COVID shutdown. There was kind of a natural churn in the economy, and there were always kind of job openings and whatnot. We're still way above that kind of long-term average, but we're coming down from the peak. So in that regard, I think that WMC is correct in the sense that we're kind of tapering off a little bit, but we're still at very, very high levels from a historical perspective. So there's still a lot of businesses that are trying to hire, looking to hire people. And this is, I mean, depending on what industry you're looking at, I mean, it's getting worse in some industries, it's getting better in other industries. I think that the upward pressure on wages is kind of played out a little bit. I think he's right in the sense that we're going to continue to see wages increase, but at a decreasing rate. I think in terms of the labor force participation rate, I think we got a couple of things that are going on there. I think one is a lot of baby boomers are taking early retirement. They're not sticking around the way they used to, so they're kind of moving out of the labor force by choice. I think that the women's labor force participation rate is back up to where it was, but there's still a constraint because of childcare. Childcare still predominantly falls on women in our society, and we have a serious childcare issue. We are losing people in terms of out-migration, but when you start talking about what do we need to do to kind of reverse that, I think that's where we can have an honest conversation. We tend to be pretty good about pointing out the problem, but not talking about what potential solutions are.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. First point I'd like to make is in southern Wisconsin, west of Madison, people are packing in droves. So I don't see the not so many people in Wisconsin because it's way crowded down here. Two, a lot of people, older people, I'm 56. I'm leaving my job because of pay. The pay has gotten so miserable that most people I know, and I've got a lot of friends, are doing the same thing. We're all sick of it. And we're all quitting our jobs and we're all going into business for ourselves, just doing little odds and ends. Because there's so many little projects out there a guy can do. But, you know, my wife's in childcare, and that's just ridiculous what they pay for after, 10 hours a day of taking care of kids. So,
and Tim, I want to ask him, what line of work are you in?
I'm right now, I went from construction to maintenance, and I'm getting out of maintenance because there's no money in it. Right. The company I work for has three vice presidents who just got raises.
Tim, thanks a lot for sharing the stories. Okay, a lot there that Tim gave us to work with. He's feeling like he has the ability to leave that job that he doesn't feel pays well enough. Steve, do you think this is a common story?
I think it's a very common story. When you have a unemployment rate, I mean, the Wisconsin unemployment rate now is around 2.4%, which is historic lows. I mean, you have to go back to 1999, 1980 before we come anywhere close to that, and that was 3.1%. So with this record low unemployment rate, although we're coming off the peak in terms of the number of job openings, I mean, it is really ripe for people to say, I'm tired of doing this. I'm going to try something else. Or I can make an extra dollar an hour if I flip over to that job. We're seeing more and more of that. I think the other thing we're seeing is a generational change, is that I think increasingly people that stay in the same job for many, many years is becoming rarer and rarer. I think it's becoming much more common for folks to kind of job hop. And I think that that is, it's almost become a cultural thing.
And our guest, our caller there also brought up, you know, in his neck of the woods, southern Wisconsin, he said west of Madison, he's seeing plenty of people move in. Now, this overall picture of Wisconsin demographics, it varies from place to place. We've seen a boom in Dane County and the surrounding area, I think. So one size doesn't fit all when we're talking about people coming in and leaving Wisconsin.
That's exactly right. A lot of what's happening in southwestern Wisconsin is... One is the quality of life in that part of the state is very, very high. It's a very beautiful part of the state. And folks are starting to say, look, I could work in Verona at Epic and live 30 miles west. And I have to be in the office one day a week, and I'm willing to commute greater distances. You put in housing prices. I got a job in Madison. I would prefer to live in Madison, but I can get a much nicer house 20 miles outside of town. We're seeing more and more and more of that. And with the advent of remote work, even if it's, you know, 2 days a week or 3 days a week, that kind of lets people be a little bit more mobile in terms of where they live.
Thanks again for that call, Tim. Gave us a lot to talk about there. Talking to Steve Deller from UW-Madison, looking at Wisconsin's economy, Wisconsin's job scene. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Rob. So my question for your guest, sir, I guess I'm wondering how much of this with the job market is a function of that we didn't continue to develop manufacturing infrastructure and sector after NAFTA, and then they started sending the jobs over to China, versus how much of it is a function of the collective bargaining that Scott Walker eliminated?
Oh, the Scott Walker Act 10. How long have you got to talk about that one?
Well, and right to work as well.
And right to work. I'm not sure that that's had as much of an impact as folks have been thinking about. We can talk about that. But I think what's happening with manufacturing, I think there's two things that are happening. I think that the future of manufacturing in Wisconsin, in the U.S., is not large scale commodity production, but rather smaller scale, flexible manufacturing and, you know, higher quality. We can't compete with China and Southeast Asia on producing inexpensive blinds for your windows. We can't compete on that, but we can compete on specialized manufacturing. So that's one. That's growing. But also robotics. The ability of, you know, kind of substituting machines for people has just really exploded. We've talked before about robotic milking in agriculture, in dairy farming, that when that first came out, people thought, yeah, right, that's Star Trek, Star Wars type stuff. And it's become pretty popular. And I think we're seeing that in manufacturing.
So thanks for that call, Marcus. So that for that manufacturing job, it sounds like, okay, instead of this factory hiring hundreds of people out of high school, they might be hiring dozens of people, but with more advanced training?
Correct. You need to know basic math. You need to know computer skills. You don't need to be an engineer, but you need to kind of be moving in that direction a little bit. So the thing is that the person who barely made it out of high school, landing a really high-paying job at a manufacturing plant because their Uncle Joe's a union steward, those days are gone. But those manufacturing jobs are there, but you need to have some post-high school education, technical schools, or some continuing education courses. Now, one of the problems with the Act 10 and the right to work is that the labor unions oftentimes was a mechanism to provide a lot of that training. They provided internships and things like that, apprenticeships. Those have kind of gone away. So we need to think about how do we make investments for that continuing training and continuing education.
Thanks again for that call, Marcus. Liz is with us now in Lyons. Liz, hello.
Hi. So my question is, I keep reading these articles about people complaining after they get out of college that they can't get hired because they don't have previous work experience in the field. Well, I think the problem is that these people don't want to train them. Somebody's got to get trained.
Liz, thanks a lot for the call. There's been this debate. The educational system, high school or college, needs to train people with these specific work skills so they're job ready when they grab that diploma versus no, employers need to be willing to train. Has that changed with a tight labor market?
I think it is. I think that employers are kind of loosening up the gap. You've heard stories about how some state governments around the country have said, you know, that job really doesn't require a college degree. Mm-hmm. And they're rethinking classification of this. And I think that's true. I do think that there's been this, again, this generational change. My parents, for example, were, children of the Great Depression. And my father was, kind of the culture was, is the company made a long-term investment in you and you made a long-term investment in the company. And the company would provide professional development. I think a lot of that's gone now. Increasingly, you get into a job environment and they're not providing you with that technical training. They're basically saying, here's the manual, figure it out. And that's where we kind of need to rethink our educational system.
Liz, thanks a lot for that call. Steve, under a minute left. What is your next big unanswered question in Wisconsin's job market?
I think we need to have an honest conversation as to why we have negative net migration. Mm-hmm. I think with the recent budget debates, I think we kind of laid out our strategies, and I think those strategies are not working. This drive towards cutting services in the name of tax cuts is not working. I think we need to rethink what kind of investments do we as a state need to make in order to make Wisconsin more attractive. And at the top of that list is education, whether that's K-12, technical schools, or the UW system. We need to rethink our commitment to education.
Sounds like a preview for our next conversation. Steve, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Steve Deller, professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. He joined us to break down the results of a recent survey of Wisconsin businesses and what it tells us about Wisconsin's current and maybe future job market. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, find out how communities around the state are working to make a better life for people with dementia. Join that conversation. It's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Yesterday on the show, I invited you to share a brush with celebrity. Well, Leon responded with an email, quote, "When I worked a season at Yellowstone National Park, I heard rumors that former Colts coach Tony Dungy was visiting with his family. I thought I'd have success locating him in the cabins area, so I went looking there. Moments later, park security drove up next to me in a golf cart and stared me down. After a few tense seconds, he asked, 'You're looking for Tony, right?' I replied, 'Yes.' He said, 'Follow me.' Then it felt like an exciting spy movie when the security guard radioed his coworkers asking for Tony's exact location. Once he was located at a nearby dining hall, the security guard escorted me to Tony Dungy's table. I got to shake his hand, and I even got to say to him, 'As a Packer fan, thank you for beating the Chicago Bears in the Super Bowl.' I checked the history. That was Super Bowl 41 in 2007, Colts 29, Bears 17. The halftime show was Prince. Leon, thanks for sharing that brush with celebrity. You could share yours at ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, advice is everywhere, but it's not all good. We talk about how to tell if the advice you're getting, whether it's from friends, parents, strangers on the internet, is good or should be ignored. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a Wisconsin pilot who will be making a homecoming at this weekend's Milwaukee Air and Water Show.
The U.S. Navy Blue Angels may be the most recognizable group of performing aviators in the world. Flying at up to 60 air shows in North America each year, the F-18 pilots who make up this unit are among the best of the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps. One of the current Blue Angels is a Wisconsin native, Lieutenant Commander Griffin Stangle, who grew up in Madison. Dusty Weiss got to know Stangle while flying with the Blue Angels.
We're cruising along over the Gulf of Mexico at about 500 miles an hour in an F-18 Super Hornet fighter jet. And in the pilot seat in front of me, Lieutenant Commander Griffin Stangle wants to talk football.
Dusty, are you a Packers fan?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay, cool. My wife's a Vikings fan, so we had a rough weekend, but we're working through it, obviously.
Proof that you could take the boy out of Wisconsin, make him an elite naval aviator, and give him the assignment this year of Blue Angel number 6. But you can't take the Wisconsin out of the boy.
Like, I grew up in Madison. I went to Madison West. I am just a person who decided one day that I'm going to follow my passion and try to be best pilot I can be.
Stengel's journey began 15 years ago. Inspired by a class that he took with Madison pilot Diane Ballwig, he studied aviation at the University of North Dakota and then joined the U.S. Navy. In flight school, he was drawn to the raw power and majesty of flying F-18 fighter jets launched off of carriers at sea.
It's awesome. You could be having the worst day, and as soon as you get shot off the front end, it changes your outlook, and you're just flying, you know?
But flying F-18s is one of the most sought-after roles in the Navy. Stengel says the training and competition were intense. But a decade later, his drive and determination have now earned him a coveted assignment as one of only 260 Blue Angels pilots in history. I wanted to understand just how demanding his job is.
All right, Dusty.
That is why I found myself strapped snugly into the F-18 passenger seat behind Stengel at Blue Angels headquarters in Pensacola.
First leg max afterburner.
Liftoff is like a rocket launch. And over the next hour, Stengel subjects me to maneuvers with names like the Split S and the Half Cuban 8.
This is incredible!
Yeah.
But the real eye-openers are the high G turns, where you experience 6 or 7 times the normal force of gravity. If you don't flex every muscle in your legs and core and breathe just right, the inertia can pull all the blood from your brain and cause you to black out.
All right, we're coming to the right for 6 Gs. Ready, hit it.
The Gs don't come on gradually.
There's 6.
It feels like I'm being hit by 1,000 pounds of sandbags all at once.
We're rolling out. All right, brother, how you feeling?
Oh, man, that was a lot. Started graying out a little bit, but do you get gray during that? Or are you just like cool as a cucumber?
We're pretty accustomed to pulling these Gs all the time.
It's all I can do just to keep it together. But it is clear that Lieutenant Commander Griffin Stengel is undeniably in his element here.
Oh, I remember the first time I took off in an F-18. It's a pretty wild sensation.
Are you going to be spoiled for the rest of your life?
You know, there's that distinct possibility. That just kind of reminds me to take every day, give it 100%, and not take anything for granted. It's a privilege to be working with such incredible people who are so dedicated to giving their all every day. Being able to stay a part of the Blue Angel team is just a true blessing.
For 60 precious minutes, I have the opportunity to experience exactly what Stengel is talking about. Sure, I end up drenched in sweat and panting for breath.
Just like that, we're back on solid ground.
But Stengel's ability to perform under those conditions with a chuckle and a grin leaves me with a profound respect for the incredible drive and athleticism that it takes to fly the F-18. And he says being able to showcase that singular talent for the first time over his home state of Wisconsin is a special experience.
Yeah, it's a real treat flying over a city that was a big part of my childhood. Coming home and seeing the places that I went to growing up, it kind of means a lot, you know? You never forget where you come from.
A return to his roots for a proud Wisconsinite who earned his wings.
Dusty Weiss is host and producer of the Lead Balloon Podcast, and he's based in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Lieutenant Commander Griffin Stengel and the rest of the Blue Angels will perform at the Milwaukee Air and Water Show on July 22nd and 23rd. Now it's easy to find advice in this world. Friends and family, randos on the internet, everyone can be a source of advice, even if you didn't ask for it. So how are we supposed to know if someone's opinion, whether it's a professional opinion or an unsolicited one, is actually worth listening to? Advice giving and taking is an age-old pastime. Historians say advice columns have been around for at least 300 years. Our next guest interviewed advice-giving experts to get some advice about how to figure out what advice to take and what to trash. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's the best advice you've ever gotten? What's the worst advice you've ever gotten? Do you try to share advice with other people? When and where and when do you just clam up and listen? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Allie Volpe is a senior reporter at Vox. Allie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
What led you to seek advice about advice for your piece, Allie?
Yeah, it's funny. It is a little meta. A lot of what I cover does require me reaching out to experts and getting their advice on a variety of topics. And a workplace discussion kind of veered down this topic of like, well, what advice is good advice? And so I was kind of working with the working headline of advice about advice. So I figure, you know, if we are doling it out, we might as well teach people what advice to take and what to ditch.
Now, in general, there have been some studies on this, and it sounds like getting advice, if we do it right, it can help us make better decisions. What do we know?
Right. Like we all know what we know and we don't know what we don't know. We have our biases. We have our blinders up to certain things. There was studies that actually showed if you got advice from a sports fan who was a fan of a team you weren't rooting for, you made a better bet on how the game would resolve if you, you know, took their advice instead of just going with your gut, hoping that your preferred team would win. So taking advice does help us make better decisions, but we're not very good at taking that advice, even if we've asked for it ourselves, research shows.
How do we make sure we're getting advice that might actually confront our blind spots as opposed to so-and-so thinks, we don't think this out loud probably, but so-and-so thinks like I do, they'll back me up in this decision I'm making, whether it's right or not. How do we make sure we're getting a positive committee, not a yes men kind of committee?
Right. I think it's important to think about who's giving the advice. Is it somebody who has expertise in the area we're looking for advice in? I maybe wouldn't go to my best friend for legal advice if they do not have that sort of expertise. So I think it's important to look at where that advice is coming from, because maybe oftentimes a close friend or a family member might just be saying what they think we want to hear and instead of what we actually need to hear.
Now, if we don't want to hear advice, how can we put ourselves, or the advice that's going to help us, how do we put ourselves in a mindset to say, okay, this isn't what I wanted to hear. Maybe I need to take it seriously, though.
So what I found interesting from reporting this piece is sometimes we do get that advice that is like, I don't want to do this. This feels hard. This feels mm-hmm. difficult. But sometimes that's what we need to do. I found it interesting that people often take advice when it is it aligns with our life, it addresses a problem, and it's feasible to achieve, and it doesn't have any major consequences or side effects. So sometimes good advice just comes in bad packages. Like sometimes a parent might tell us advice in a condescending manner, or advice might feel that it is too difficult. But sometimes we just need to take a step back and think about it. That bit of advice that we maybe thought was too hard or didn't align with our lives maybe is the thing we should do. I talked to an advice columnist who talked about someone who wrote in asking for advice on whether to ask out somebody who they had a crush on. And so the hard thing to do would to give the advice of yes, ask out that person. That is a vulnerable thing that sometimes might give us butterflies. It might feel bad, but it's the right thing to do. Sometimes the hard thing or the thing that gives us the negative reaction is the right thing to do.
We asked around here at Wisconsin Public Media, Aaron Cook, one of our HR people, says the first thing I always try to do is filter the advice through several lenses. Is this advice helpful or hurtful? The result of knowledge and experience versus bias. Is it a judgment or an actual critique on any sort of content? Finally, I consider where the advice is coming from and where I stand in relation to it. Who's the expert? Is this something creative or emotional? A long line of filters there for advice, Allie. Aaron is clearly thinking about ways to figure out what advice is good or not. What did you hear from experts when it came to evaluating advice in those ways?
Yeah, definitely the panel of getting a lot of different opinions was something that experts definitely sang the praises of. Getting a number of different viewpoints helps us to consider all angles that we maybe didn't consider. But then there comes a point where if you are just asking dozens and dozens of people, maybe you haven't really thought about what you actually want. So it is helpful if you can get a clear consensus from a panel of a handful of people. But if you feel the need to keep asking people, you probably just don't know what you want.
We're talking about how to tell if we're getting good or bad advice with Allie Volpe, senior reporter at Vox. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you tell if you're getting good advice or bad advice? Any advice you regret taking or not taking in your life? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about sorting out good advice from bad with Ali Volpe. She's a senior reporter. She wrote about this at Vox. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Ellen is with us in Peterborough. Ellen, hi.
Hi. Oh, this one is kind of odd. I was in a very intense year-long program at Milwaukee Mental Health Complex. I received very good care, and I had a psychiatrist who saw me every week. At the end of that year, his last advice to me was, watch those left turns, Ellen. And as a person who drives a lot, I have found that he was right. But I think it's hilarious that after that, you know, that was his advice.
I love it, Ellen. I thank you for sharing that, Ellen. I like that in part because, okay, we've been through this long experience, but here's some really, I don't know, grounding, very practical advice that's going to help anybody who, in this case, anybody who drives.
Right. Sometimes the most practical thing is the best thing to do. And the advice that sort of takes us by surprise, I find the most memorable and that I will actually use.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Ellen, at 800-642-1234. Yeah, what I hope my kids take away from growing up in my house is careful on the steps, because stairs are great, but yeah, they'd be dangerous if you're not careful on them. Now, looking back at the experts you talked to, Ali, sometimes we offer advice when it isn't really being solicited. How can we be careful not to give that unwanted advice?
Right. And I am so guilty of this sometimes. Sometimes all people want is just to vent. They don't want advice. And I found it's actually just really easy to ask somebody straight up, do you want advice or do you just want me to listen? And no one is ever really offended by that. And oftentimes people just want you to listen. And so I make sure when I'm about to vent to a friend or get their advice, I'll often preface it with, oh, I really want your advice on this, or can I tell you about something? And I think that sort of guides the conversation so you're not getting unsolicited advice.
We heard from Susan in Suamico. She says the best advice she was ever given was from her father when she was pregnant with her first. She said the advice was the best thing to spend on your child is time. Oh, I like that. So that's an example of someone with a specific bit of experience. It was her dad talking about child raising. I don't know. Are there good general kinds of advice that we can reach out to and get that kind of wisdom?
I love that bit of advice. Something an expert told me that really stuck out to me was somebody who's in the quote unquote messy middle of an experience often has really good insight, even though they might feel that they don't. So a parent who maybe has toddlers and they're in the middle of it is better suited to give advice about parenting than maybe someone who's an empty nester, because you are the one who's actually experiencing it every day.
Let's go back to our callers. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. Well, to follow up on an earlier comment, UPS used to instruct their drivers to make three right turns on a block instead of taking a left to prevent accidents. But my advice, I'm not sure if it was a line in a movie or on a TV show or something from one of my grandfathers or an uncle or my dad, but it was in the context of an Italian restaurant, and it was simply, don't fill up on bread.
I love it, Tom. And have you lived by this rule?
Actually, I've probably strayed from it, but I think that when I think of it, it means the main course is still coming.
Excellent. Tom, thanks a lot for sharing that. We're asking for your best or worst advice ever given or received. Ali Volpe wrote about how we evaluate advice we get. She's a senior reporter at Vox. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Our own Larry Mueller, host of the Larry Mueller Show here at Wisconsin Public Radio, told us, my high school guidance counselor told me I should not attend UW-Madison, but find a smaller school where I'd have a better chance to succeed. I asked my dad about it, and he said I should go where I want, and if I failed, I could try another school. So Larry says, I went to UW-Madison, succeeded, eventually became a full professor at UW, and had a pretty successful radio career on campus, I would add, Larry. Ali, when we're making a big, or at least what feels at the time like a huge life decision, like where should I go to college or what job should I seek or whatever. What did you learn from the people you interviewed about how to seek out useful advice?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that we tend to favor advisors who are more confident, but those people might not always be the most accurate. So I think it's important to get diverse points of view. Like, we tend to seek out people who are similar to us. So finding people who have a different experience than we do in getting advice can often help lead us in the right direction. So it's funny that the guidance counselor, you know, said one thing, Dad said another thing. And so you kind of just take the average of those two bits of advice, which experts say is actually a good way to go.
We'll go back to our callers now. Ganado is with us in Milwaukee. Ganado, hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I'd love to see two media sources that I love combined together. I read Ali's articles as well on Vox all the time. But my piece of advice that I wanted to talk about was when I first started grad school, I was not doing super hot because I had just moved to Milwaukee and was starting a new job, and so it wasn't my primary focus in life. I had asked one of my friends who was recently in grad school, like, hey, should I stay with the course or drop it? He suggested that I stay, which not a very good decision because GPA requirements in grad school are very different from undergrad. So I ended up my first semester in academic probation. So funny story there. I think we both lacked some context, but just wanted to share that.
Well, I hope things got better.
They did. I did graduate, and things turned out fine in the end.
Yay. Okay. Glad to hear that part of it. But, Ali, I think sometimes there's an instinct to say when you give advice, stick to it. Power through. Don't give up. And sometimes giving up, as in the case of Ganado's class, might be the right advice.
Right. I think that comes back to sort of the criteria that good advice fulfills, you know, whether it solves a problem, is feasible, and doesn't have any consequences. I would argue, you know, spending a lot of money on something that, you know, you might not achieve at is a pretty big consequence or side effect. And therefore, that advice maybe isn't the best.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story. I appreciate it. Now, one expert told you, this is in like broadening horizons here, don't just consider advice from people who have succeeded, right? Because that seems obvious. Seek out people maybe in similar situations who have failed in one way or another. Why is that helpful?
Yeah, one expert gave an example of someone who has been divorced and getting marriage advice from them. They can kind of see the other side. They can see where things have gone wrong, maybe things that they would have done differently. Not to say that we should only be seeking advice from people who have failed something, but they have a unique perspective on, you know, things that didn't go right. That same expert also said getting advice from somebody who, you know, is in the middle of something is really helpful as well. Like somebody who's maybe like in the middle of training for a marathon, but they are like exhausted by it. But giving advice to someone who is a little bit less experienced can help like revive them a little bit and get them excited and remind them why they're doing it.
I want to talk about a source of advice that previous generations weren't lucky enough to have access to, random people on the internet. What did experts say about the advice of, you know, the whole planet online?
Yeah, everyone loves to give advice online. And I think it comes down to just some basic media literacy tips. You know, anyone can post a TikTok telling you how to wake up earlier in the morning. And you might feel susceptible to that. Like, yeah, I can achieve so much more if I got up early. But one, you need to think about, like, do you actually want that advice? Or are you just kind of consuming it passively and think that's something that you might need for your life, but it doesn't actually fit in with your schedule? Something else is like that any person online can put up a video. But what is their credentials? What is their expertise? My colleague, Rebecca Jennings, did this great piece about online influencers posting online courses to their YouTube pages or, you know, getting people to pay money for online courses that they have set up themselves. So do they have any expertise in that? I don't know. Are they just looking to get money? Probably. So if a person is, you know, saying something or doing something to solicit some sort of reaction from somebody, whether that is to be angry or to give them money, I would be skeptical of their advice.
It's a good place to leave it. Ali, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Allie Volpe, senior reporter at Vox. She talked to us about her recent article, How to Tell When You're Getting Good Advice. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, businesses are seeing backlash when they get involved in social issues, and that's not a new thing. A historian joins the show to share stories of protests against businesses who embraced civil rights progress in previous generations. And the latest Spider-Man multiverse movie is getting attention for its unique animation style. We'll dig into the history of animated movies, some of the groundbreaking innovations, the big moments, and we're hoping you'll share your favorites. You can get started right now, by the way. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Your favorite animated movie of all time, and maybe why. That and more, it's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, a UW Health psychiatrist joins us to look at racial disparities in mental health care in Wisconsin and what we can do to reduce those disparities. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.